This is a podcast from CSIS, the Center for Strategic and International Studies, a private nonpartisan think tank located in Washington, D.C.
Good afternoon. This is Johanna Nesseth. I head up our Global Food Security Initiative here at CSIS, and today I'm very pleased to talk with Phil Pardee. Phil Pardee is a professor of science and technology policy in the Department of Applied Economics at the University of Minnesota. He also directs the university's International Science and Technology Practice and Policy Center. And Phil was the co-author of a report on U.S. agricultural research in a global food security setting. Phil's co-author is Julian Alston, and he is a professor in the Department of Agriculture and Resource Economics of the University of California, Davis. Now, we asked Phil and Julian to take on this report because it was part of an effort that CSIS was doing to look at long-term issues affecting global food security and global hunger. It's an area that has not been widely explored by foreign policy institutions, so we asked Phil and Julian to explore it in a way that made sense to a broad range of foreign policy practitioners and experts, and we want to ask Phil to go into a little more detail about some of the issues that they explored in their paper. Phil, thank you for joining us today. I want to ask you first if you could please describe the linkage between agricultural research and development and food security.
Sure, Anna. It's a delight to be here. The key aspect of that linkage, as far as economists are concerned, are the role that investments in R&D, and particularly agricultural research and development, plays in stimulating productivity growth. That productivity growth comes about through the new technologies and new techniques and improved inputs and outputs that stem from R&D. And it's these new techniques and new ways of doing business that increase agricultural productivity. And what we mean by productivity is simply that if the rate of growth of output goes up faster than the rate of growth of inputs, then productivity will increase. So for millennia, agriculture increased its output by just expanding the amount of inputs that it used in agriculture. So as we ploughed in more land into agriculture, we could obviously produce more crops and grow more livestock. But we're coming up to constraints on our capacity to do that. And have been for some time, and certainly in countries like the US, the agricultural frontier closed many years ago. So now what we turn to is trying to make better use of the land and resources that are committed to agriculture. And so in US agriculture, over the last 100 years or so, we've actually increased the quantity of agricultural production by about fivefold, yet we only use 1.4 times more inputs in agriculture. So to the extent that we're getting a lot more output for a lot slower growth in input use, we show that up as agricultural productivity growth. And the reason that the US is a key player in this with respect to global food security concerns is that, number one, the US produces a very significant share of the world's principal food and feed staples, particularly corn, wheat and soybeans, but other crops as well. Probably little known to many is that the US now produces well over 40% of the entire world's corn crop. And so if we can increase production and productivity of those crops here in the US, that clearly has a significant impact on the availability of those food and feed crops globally. But the second way the US plays a big role in linking R&D to food security is through these new ideas and new techniques and know-how. They not only affect agricultural productivity and production in the US, but those ideas spill over and spur productivity growth elsewhere in the world. And so scientists in other countries pick up and adapt and develop these ideas and tailor them to the local circumstances that constrain their production systems. And so in both of these ways, the US's research system plays a very pivotal role with respect to the global food supply situation.
Now, thank you for that overview. I'd like to ask you to go into a little more detail regarding trends in public and private investments in research and development as investments have shifted so dramatically over the past several decades. I'd like to ask you a little bit about the trends in U.S. public spending on ag R&D and how they compare overall to spending on sciences and international ag R&D. And then secondly, to talk a little bit about the role the private sector now plays in ag research.
Sure. There have been very substantial shifts, as you say, Johanna, in both the pace and the nature of investments in agricultural research in the US. In 2007, which is the latest figures we have to hand, public sector spending, that is spending in research done in public institutions, a total about $4.8 billion in the US. About a third of that research was conducted in federal labs like the United States Department of Agriculture, the USDA. And about two-thirds of that research was done in land-grant universities and experiment stations located throughout the states. If you add in the private sector, that mix, that $4.82 billion of public money totals about $9.4 million of public and private money. So in the US, about half, just a little over half of the food and agricultural research is done in private labs, and about a half is done in the public sector. Agricultural research spending relative to total science spending, so we're spending about $9.4 billion on food and agricultural research. The US in 2007 invested $368 billion in all areas of science. So agricultural R&D spending is a fairly small drop in the science bucket with respect to the US. One of the key shifts we've seen in the trends of R&D spending is a very substantial slowdown in the rate of public investment in agricultural research. Back in the 50s and 60s and through to the 70s, once we've taken account of the effects of inflation, we saw public spending in agricultural research growing at over 4% per annum. But in the last decade or a decade and a half, that's slowed to well less than 1% per annum. And so there's been a very sizable ratcheting down in the rates of growth of investment in agricultural R&D. There's also been a very significant shift in the orientation of that research. Back in the mid-70s, about two-thirds of that research in the public sector was directed towards maintaining and enhancing agricultural productivity, the things that spur growth in the supply of food and fibre and help in the global food situation. Now that 66% or two-thirds of spending on productivity research has slipped to barely over half of the research being directed to agricultural productivity, maintenance and enhancement. And so what we've seen is a slowing of the rate of growth of public spending in total and a redirection of that spending away from productivity research to doing lots of other things like worrying about the environmental effects of agriculture, aspects of food safety and food quality, and also the sort of medical, energy and industrial uses of agricultural commodities. So it's not to say that these new uses don't have significant economic value, but it is to say that those new uses have come at the expense of underwriting or expanding past productivity gains.
Phil, could you speak briefly about some of the major innovations developed by U.S. scientists that can be adopted internationally?
Yeah, the U.S. Has had a long history in both the public and private sector in developing new technologies, and they range all the way from a major presence in agricultural machinery. John Deere, for example, is a global player with respect to the development and diffusion of agricultural technologies. Lots of changes in the way we fertilize and control weeds and so forth coming out of agricultural chemical companies, which have been spurred by innovations in R&D conducted here in the US. And increasingly, in latter years, a much greater presence of the private sector, underwritten by very substantial basic and genomic and genetic research in the public sector, but a substantial increase in the private sector presence with respect to improved seed varieties in corn and soybeans and horticulture, including biotechnology varieties, but extending more beyond that to varieties that have been bred by sort of conventional, so-called conventional means, and also improved livestock breeds, particularly in the poultry and hog industry. There's been massive improvements in livestock breeds over the decades. Many of these technologies have direct impact in many developing countries, certainly not all, but in many. But these technologies just don't can't just be picked up from the Midwest and plonked down in the middle of Africa. They require lots of adaptation in many cases to tailor those technologies to the local agroclimatic conditions and the local pest and disease and marketing structures that exist in the developing world. And so whilst there's lots of potential for these technologies from the US to spill over, there's lots of hard work that needs to be done to realise that potential.
Thank you for those illustrations. Finally, I want to close by asking you for a few recommendations. You and Julian talk about ag R&D as being at a crossroads in your paper. I'd like to ask you to elaborate on some of the U.S. policies that could require rethinking and some of the suggestions that you might make in revitalizing the ag research and development agenda.
Yeah, I think that one of the key things, although it's a hard ask in these tight budgetary times, is to rethink and perhaps revitalize the spending and the orientation of agricultural R&D investments in the U.S. As I mentioned earlier, there's been this very substantial and persistent slowdown in the rates of growth of R&D spending over time, and so whilst we've had a big ramping up in public investments in health R&D, we certainly haven't seen that same type of engagement over the last several decades, at least with respect to agricultural R&D. And as I also mentioned, we've had this sort of reorientation of that spending away from maintaining and enhancing productivity to pursuing many of these other new agendas for research. And so I think one of the key things is to think about how to revitalize just the amount of an orientation of investment in research. Now, we can do that in several ways. One is to rethink the priorities of federal spending generally and perhaps of the USDA in particular. As I mentioned, barely 2% of all the federal spending in all areas of science is directed towards agricultural research. So a very small redirection on the margin with respect to the total science agenda would have a very big impact on the amount of total spending in agricultural research in particular. And barely 2 to 3% of the USDA's budget actually gets directed to agricultural research now. It's a very tiny fraction spent on research relative to the amount spent on food and nutrition programs. And I think roughly one-tenth of the spending on agricultural research compared with the annual spending on farm commodity subsidies. So one is sort of doing some hard political work to perhaps redirect that spending. Another one is to perhaps think about innovative institutional mechanisms to try and incentivize both the agro industry but also farmer organizations to invest in research, which clearly is a direct benefit to them in terms of improving their competitiveness in international markets. And in fact, there's been experimentations, quite successful ones, in other parts of the globe, and particularly one country I'm familiar with in Australia back in the mid-80s instigated a completely new mechanism for financing much of the publicly performed research, and what they put in place was some enabling legislation that allowed farmers to levy themselves for funding that is earmarked and directed solely to agricultural research, and in exchange for that commitment, the government matches on a dollar-for-dollar basis. For every dollar the industry raises, the government commits a dollar of funding up to some ceiling of the gross value of production of a sector. So, for example, 0.5% or 1% of the gross value of production of the wheat sector is spent on agricultural research. And as long as the money is directed to research, the government underwrites this commitment to match that funding. I think a key element of that whole process is also the institutional structures that go behind it. In the Australian case, this funding is not overseen by the equivalent of the USDA. It's overseen by a completely independent agency, a so-called Research and Development Corporation, which has representation from government and from industry and from consumers. And the idea is to keep the funding mechanisms at arm's length from both the agencies funding the research and the agencies performing the research. And in that way, the hope is to avoid problems of moral hazard and so forth when the person giving the money is also perhaps seeking it. And this mechanism has been very effective in Australia. Upwards of 40 and perhaps now approaching 50% of all of the research conducted in public institutions like the universities and federal research labs and so forth in agriculture is now financed through that mechanism. I think another area that needs revisiting is thinking about the US government's support to international initiatives in agricultural research. Back in 1970, a so-called consultative group on international research, the CGIAR, was formed. And this consultative group is a collective effort to fund international agricultural research, which is done in labs like the International Wheat and Maize Improvement Center down in Mexico, where Norman Borlaug spent many years and developed his high-yielding wheat varieties, or over in the International Rice Research Institute in the Philippines, where they developed semi-dwarf high-yielding rice varieties, which were instrumental in turning potential basket cases in the 70s in Asia into surplus-producing countries with respect to rice. And the U.S. has traditionally played a very big role in supporting that effort. For many, many years, the U.S. Contributed over 20% of the entire budget for that consultative group. But in recent years, that funding has dwindled, and so barely 10% of the funding of that collective effort now comes from the U.S. government. And so there's perhaps a clear basis for rethinking and re-engaging in these international collaborative actions. But there's also new opportunities, and not just the CGIAR, but there's certainly new players like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which are investing very significantly in agricultural research efforts targeted to sub-Saharan Africa and Southeast Asia. And also companies like Monsanto and Pioneer DuPont and others are increasingly engaging in these markets to try and help spur productivity growth and clearly develop their self-interest in terms of marketing agricultural inputs, but hopefully doing well by doing good in terms of getting agriculture moving in many parts of the world where there's been a slowing down in productivity growth or where past productivity impacts have more or less bypassed these regions. And so I think there's roles for thinking about engaging these private foundations and private companies in all sorts of new ways to target research specifically to the needs of small and smallholders and poor farmers in many parts of the developing world, which are still in dire need of opportunities to pick up and use new technologies that can help spur productivity growth for them. I think the final point to note is that this is the thing about these links between R&D and productivity and their ultimate impacts on food security is not a short run, but definitely a long run game. We've just finished off some work here in the US, which shows that the lags between when you invest in R&D and realise the productivity improvement consequences of those investments are decadal in length. It's not a year or two. It takes decades for this process to develop these new technologies and get the new technologies worked up and adapted in the hands of farmers and for them to realise these productivity consequences. And so any of the efforts to try and revitalise or spur initiatives to invest in R&D targeted directly to sort of rest of world food security concerns is going to have to be undertaken with an eye to the very long run and sustaining those new commitments over the coming decades, not over the coming year or two.
Phil, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and for you and Julian for preparing this paper, which can be found on our website. We appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
My pleasure, Joanna.
Thank you for listening to the CSIS podcast. For more, please visit us online at www.csis.org.